This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 5, Episode 22, War and Peace. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, it's a one question special, one huge question, one even more epic answer from a very special panel, including a new player in the team. Keep listening to find out exactly what's going on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's your online pavilion, your place to go where the sun is always shining, the nets are always ready for you to have a bat, and it's time for us to talk about cricket for another half an hour. My name is David Hinchliffe, and joining me on the line, we've got a spectacular team ready to help you with your cricketing questions and your cricketing queries, including a new member of the side. We'll come to that in a moment. First of all, it's the regulars. First of all, Mark Garraway. He's Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. How's it going, Garris?
Very well, thank you. All good to be here.
Second on the line is the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School, a man who is right in the middle of a game of cricket at the moment. It's Sam Lavery. Welcome, Lavers.
Hello there. Yes, in London today, but lovely weather, lovely sunshine. So, very nice day so far.
Yeah, we can feel the breeze.
Oh, sorry.
Is it London Gatwick that you're at, mate?
Heathrow, Gareth, obviously, Heathrow, but...
Sorry.
Yeah, plane just landing. Hold on, let me see if I can do something about that.
And then finally, it's a talented youngster because, you know, we're all a bit long in the tooth on the show normally and jaded in every way possible, but we've got someone with enthusiasm and still got hope and spirit for the game. It's James Hughes. Welcome, James.
Hi, David. Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. And James, tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do. I think we've spoken before, haven't we? But just for those who are not quite sure,
tell us. Just briefly. I'm a university student studying sports coaching science. I've got another year left, but in my own time, I do a few bits and pieces coaching wise, and I play most Saturdays when I can.
And the reason we got James on board is because we've got a slightly different show this week in that we've got one question, but it was such an epic question that we felt we could dedicate the whole show to it. So, I mean, it's going to take about 15 minutes just to read the question. But once we've got through that, I'm going to be interested to get the views and opinions of our esteemed panel. So before we get into that question, I think we're going to have our usual yes-no round just to wrap up our normal introduction. Then we can get straight into it. So, James, if you want to join in with this one as well, I'm going to read out three questions.
Yeah.
Each one of those questions, you can only answer yes or no to, no matter how much more you want to say. Everyone gets their say. And if you want to say any more, you can't. It's just yes or no.
Easy. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, so let's make a start. First question. Side-on action is best for away swing bowling.
No.
No.
I'm going to go yes.
Second question. You should adapt your coaching to the motivations of the players.
Yes.
Yes.
Definitely yes.
Third question. The coach is the single biggest reason for both participation and dropouts in youth cricket.
No.
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 Now we're into the mailbag. It's an epic question this week, as I mentioned before.
Have we got a show title yet, by the way, David?
Not yet.
Can I throw War and Peace in there?
Yeah, quite possibly. And the question is from Andrew. And Andrew says, I've been playing cricket for nearly 20 years. And I love playing. The problem is that my ambition far outweighs my ability. I'm a reasonable left-arm spinner, number 11 batsman, and I can get by in the field. I've played sub-district cricket in Brisbane for 15 years, and I've done okay as a C-grade player. I've played over 100 games for my club, taken over 100 wickets, and a couple of 5-wicket hauls, and I've won a couple of premierships. Now I'm 32 and at the point where I just want to play for fun. I've been lucky to play winter cricket in a fun social competition where everyone gets a bowl and usually a bat. While it's great fun with a bunch of teammates whose company I enjoy, I still find myself wanting to try too hard. I'm naturally a tightly wound person and want to justify my place in the team, even if it's just for social cricket. My biggest weakness is catching. Since the end of last year, I've been working on my catching most days, but I don't have natural hand-eye coordination, so catching and fielding in general is the weakest part of my game. While I'm putting in the effort, I'm still dropping catches in games. I think it's a mental thing. I've gotten so used to dropping catches that I struggle. It's disheartening. I want to be a good cricketer, not only to have fun, but to earn my place in the team and to feel like I'm contributing. If I have a bad game, my first move is back to the nets to work on technical things I did wrong. While I have a full life outside of cricket, being a good cricketer is still a big part of my self-esteem. I enjoy playing and want to keep playing some form of cricket as long as possible. I reckon I've got another 20 years before my body starts to rebel. Cricket gives me a lot of enjoyment in my life, and it's a big part of me. So my question is, am I taking the game too seriously? If I relaxed more and cared less about the result and enjoyed playing more, I'd probably be more satisfied. I want to do well and contribute. It's no fun being there to make up the numbers. But what would help me to enjoy the game more? And what would you suggest to help with the mental side of the game? There's quite a lot there to unwrap. Let's start with you, Garrus. You want to pick something out of that and dig in?
I'm going to say, no, you don't take it too seriously. It obviously plays a huge part in your life. And I think all of us sitting here would be probably on the same boat as you in terms of the impact that cricket's had on our life. And, you know, and an evidence of that really is the fact that even when you haven't been playing and you've chosen to take some time off from playing, that you naturally gravitate towards a cricket club and you're doing some really vital roles within the club in terms of promotion and other things around it, which tells me that, you know, you love it. And ultimately, we need to put things around us that we thoroughly enjoy. And that's always the best way to get through life, in my view, anyway. And I'm sure that others would be in agreement with that. So I don't think you take it too seriously. I think you've come to that stage of your career, probably, where your focus is going to shift a little bit. You know, you've played some decent cricket. There's some option of some social cricket. But one of the things that I'd be really keen for you to explore, because you've obviously got a passion for it, is coaching. And actually converting yourself into a coach or somebody who player coaches. So then your focus doesn't just get on yourself, but actually goes towards others. And certainly it was a very positive thing on my personal cricket was when I took the focus off of myself. And I think we can all get a little bit self-engrossed with our performance and what we're doing and what we're not doing. And I actually played a lot of my best cricket when I first started to coach and play at the same time. And I wonder whether that's an option for you, because it will take your focus off you, put it onto others. And the things that you learn on coaching courses and from being around other coaches often then start to very, very easily and very naturally go into your own game as well. And certainly from my perspective, I'll give you an example of that. When I played professional cricket up until the last year when I started to coach and play professional cricket at the same time, I never used to go down the pitch at all against spinners. I used to stand there and I was a decent player of spin, but predominantly my game was around the sweep. And then I went on a coaching course and started working with others where I started to try and develop them, their ability to go down the pitch and be able to hit the ball over the top and to be able to knock the ball back down the ground. And without doing any practice or any specific practice, that started to embed itself within my game, and therefore my tools and skills got better. And as a result, I got more positive results and more options against spin. So bearing in mind you're so into it, the first thing I'd say to you is, have you considered coaching? Because it might take a little bit of emphasis off yourself and put it onto others, which could have a knock-on effect into your enjoyment of the play in the game itself.
Well, I think if we go back to the question, what he specifically said was he wants to contribute, and he wants to contribute to the side he's playing. And going down that coaching angle is a great, great way to still have a big impact. One of the things he hasn't mentioned is his captaincy and whether or not he's ever had any inclusion in a captaincy role. But even if there is a coach and there is a captain, there's still opportunity to play a leadership role in the side and try and add something else. I think when when everyone gets to probably the kind of ages around about now, early to mid 30s, you start to probably have to shift your goals slightly in what you can achieve. And there aren't many players at 35 who then go on to do more than they've done previously. So at 30, I believe he's 32 at the moment, it may be just be time to start thinking, actually, I can adjust my goals. But as Gareth said, if we're contributing, if we want to contribute to the side, then coaching's a great way into it. Great way to still have an impact on the side and potentially find something you've clearly got a massive passion for, something that's going to have a dramatic new lease of life for yourself and not change you from a diminishing role where you're just adjusting your targets within the club and you're looking to play a smaller role but do it better. But it could be a massive increase in your involvement and an increase in the impact you can have in your side. And potentially the side above you and the side above that by the sounds of it. So I think that's a fantastic suggestion that he's made there. It is a difficult thing when you're aware of your weaknesses. I think also I'd try and be aware of how you judge yourself in your performance. So while you are playing, you say you're getting worse, and it'd just be good to try and assess how you are getting worse. If you are, and actually maybe you're staying the same and people around you are getting better, or maybe your performance is actually improving on some days and not on other days. So try and track your performance if you can as a player. And that might be something that you learn more about as you move into coaching, if that's something you do. But try and be as measured as you can, and try and just think, how can you influence the side? How can I have a positive influence on the side now? If my catching is not great, I can put myself in a position where I'm not going to do a lot of catching. I mean, that's reasonably simple to do. But sounds like you're working on your skills, and it's something you've done for a long time. So just try and find the role in your side that is most beneficial to you, but as Gareth said previously, beneficial to the people around you, which could in turn help you along your way in your own role.
James, we've had the views of people from one end of the cricketing career spectrum. What about from the other end? Where do you see? Can you put yourself in a similar situation, or have you seen this in other players around you?
Yeah, no, I definitely can. I play with guys the same age as the this guy's questions come in from, and I think when I just look at the first sentence he wrote there, the problem is my ambition far outweighs ability. Well, I don't see that as a problem at all. I see that more as a huge positive. I at the age of 20-21 now would it's much easier for a youngster like myself to play with guys that still have ambition. When they start to not enjoy it as much, then you notice the sort of the efforts decline and that feed into the performances of the side as well. So I think it's good that you've got so much passion and ambition to continue to get better. And I'd imagine there's youngsters around your club as well that all sort of benefit from that that positive attitude you bring to the club and the guys around you. So I don't see it as a problem at all. I see that as a really good positive to have.
It sounds like he sets a really good example as well. He's even though he is into his 30s, he's still trying to develop new skills. He's still trying to improve his basic skills. And I don't think we can ever be too old to work on basics. We can never be too old to try and improve and learn new things. So it's great that he's actually doing that. And hopefully people around him see it. And obviously, along with that, it'd be nice to see a little bit of success come as a result of the effort and the hard work he's putting in, and maybe thinking about how he goes about his training and how he goes about the obvious commitment he has to his practice, and maybe just adjusting some of his practice methods of time might produce more results or better results. But as James says, that's great to see he's really committing time and effort and energy to it, and hopefully that rubs off on people around him. And even if it doesn't improve him, four or five guys on the side might say, actually, right, let's go with him, let's put the same effort in, let's try that. And even if he doesn't improve, the other guys might improve a little bit. So he's still having a positive impact on people around him.
Can I pick up on two other areas as well? First one's catching, and the mention of the lack of sort of transferability between the practice ethic, which is obviously very, very good, and some of the drills that you've worked on, which are, again, are really good. And then taking that into matches. And I think that's one of the biggest things, isn't it? You know, how can you How can you take all of the stuff that you've been doing in practice into matches? But one of the things that I see a lot with people that aren't naturally good catchers is that they allow their body to get very tense, particularly under high catches, allow their body to get really tense. And there's a couple of methods that you can use when you're out in the middle or even when you're doing your catching practice that may be of use. Peter Moores always talks about the body being soft, it being relaxed, and actually the hands and the arms are relatively robust. You don't want them to overgive. So we used to talk years ago about catching with soft hands, but nowadays really it's your body that's soft and your hands that stay on the height and line of the ball when it's coming to you, whether it be a low catcher, a catch at cover, a catch at slip, or in fact a catch that's coming down from the heavens.
Strong hands is the term that I've heard.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Strong hands, but having a really relaxed body. And where we generally tense up is in our shoulders. And that's where we gather a lot of tension when we're looking to catch. And obviously that tension in your shoulders is then going to translate all the way through the body. And we end up being a whole entity of tenseness and hardness, and the ball then bounces out. So try and control your shoulders. That's the first thing to do. The second one, and particularly around high catching, is get some tennis balls out, smack them up in the air and get under them and try to catch them one-handed. And what that tends to do is it encourages you to get your body position absolutely spot on. Because you're down to one hand, you have to get your body position in the right sort of place, and you get your posture in the right sort of place. And all of a sudden, you start catching catches with one hand very comfortably that you'd normally be chuffed to bits with that you've got with two hands. Then when you take that technical development that you've had because you've been forced into coming up with different positions and different postures and stick that into a two-handed catch, then that helps. And by increasing your skill set and your tools that you can use out on the pitch, your confidence will increase. And then naturally, that tenseness will go out of the shoulders when you catch. But the shoulders are one of the most crucial areas when we're working with people who haven't had a great history of catching successfully. If we can reduce the amount of tension in those shoulders, then it always has a positive effect on their catching rate.
James, of course, catching is your thing, isn't it? So what advice would you give to someone in this situation?
I think just Gareth picks up on a good point. I think without even in the game myself thinking about it, I think being relaxed is really important. Something that I don't notice at the moment, but I think just finding maybe a position on the field that maybe suits you, that you're confident in, because I think confidence in the field is a huge thing to have, and it doesn't always have to be in the same place. But I think, yeah, just finding a position that you enjoy, because enjoyment will bring confidence. So I think that would be one of my recommendations. Find an area on the field you like and work on that and take those developments maybe into other areas.
Yeah, think of yourself as a specialist in some area or another. If you feel like high catching is your area, then you know, try and patrol the boundary more than if you feel like you can get somewhere in close and be more of a reaction type catcher.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, agreed.
The other thing I'd say as well, don't put all your focus on your catching. We know that if you go out and score 25 runs as a number 11, confidence does appear, and it's confidence in your batting, but that spills over straight away into your fielding and your bowling. If you go and take wickets and you're doing well there, then it breeds confidence, and that's where all rounders can often have that real strong great success, where they take their confidence and they transfer it from one discipline to another. So don't just think I've got to work on my catching, that's going to spend all my time on that and neglect my other skills. Because if you do neglect your other skills, then your confidence is going to drop in your strong areas. So make sure you still keep committing to working on your bowling, trying to do new things, improve your consistency, improve your range of skills that you've got. Possibly think, have a bit of ambition with the bat. See if I can turn myself into a number 10 and then a number 9. Think about what you need to do to work your way up that order step by step. And if you can do that and you start contributing in other areas, then probably the focus comes away from you catching a little bit and you don't worry about it so much. And then suddenly you end up starting grabbing a few and someone puts you in at second slip.
That kind of brings me on to a question that I was thinking about when I read this, which was that he talks about is he wondering if he's taking the game too seriously and he wants to be successful as well as enjoy it. And what leads on from that in my mind is have a clear definition of what you consider to be successful, because you know, at the age you are and how much you've played, you know what your limits are going to be, and you know areas that you can improve, and you know areas that are probably not for you. So work out exactly what success looks like to you. And if that means batting at 9 instead of 11, or it means taking a few more wickets, or it means taking a few more catches, then when you get to that point where you feel like it's successful and you feel like you're contributing to the side in whatever way that that is, then you're going to get that satisfaction that you've had from cricket when you've had success in the past.
I think that's a really good shout. And I grew up playing cricket alongside my dad, and then he got to an age a bit older than 32, I have to say, before he started to go down the teams and played some. In fact, he went from first 11, where he was averaging sort of high 40s, to then playing in the third 11, because the third 11 was very much the development side with a lot of up and coming youngsters. And he started to define success not by how many runs he was getting, as he would have done if he was in the first team a year or so previous, but actually about the contribution or the partnerships that he was part of when he was batting. So what they tended to do was to stick a youngster at, say, 4 or 5, and then dad at 6, and then a youngster at 7. So he was always batting with a youngster, and he'd come in and I'd ask him how he'd got on. And he said, "Oh yeah, you should have seen so and so. We put on 90 something, and he played so well." And all of a sudden, his focus went, and success became other people. And then he'd talk through the partnership and how they went about it. And then all of a sudden, he'd say, "Well, so how many did you get?" He said, "Oh, I got 98, or whatever the case may be. But actually, his determination of what was success and what wasn't geared by that 98 as it would have been in the first team. It became something different. So even if he'd have scored 10. But they'd have put on 40, and he might have then put on another 10 or 20 with somebody who'd never batted for very long before. That became his focus, and that became his success. And it meant that he's still trying to play cricket, even at the age of 70, the silly bugger. But he's still doing that now. And obviously, he's not able to contribute in those partnerships, but his definition of success now is building the awareness of some of the youngsters that he's playing around. I think we have to shift, don't we? So we're 32 years old and we're playing a decent level of cricket, and then we want to stay in the game and work our way down, but our contributions are going to shift, and as a result, what is success needs to shift accordingly.
Yeah, and you can take that. I think it's a common criticism, especially in amateur cricket, where someone says, "Oh, well, he takes it a little bit too seriously, doesn't he?" And I've always thought that that's a strange thing for people to say. I mean, you take it as seriously as you take it, and that's that. if you define what taking it seriously is, like you said, Gareth, if you define what taking seriously is, that's going to help. That's going to help you take it as seriously as you want to take it, and then still enjoy it, and then still not feel like some people are looking at you with a sideways glance, thinking this guy thinks he's a pro when he's actually playing third 11 cricket.
I think a lot of people, when they say they take it too seriously, it's a little bit, sometimes just a bit scared of failing and trying, aren't they?
Yeah.
And really, well, I'd rather fail and try than fail and not try, to be honest. I mean, if at least you know you've given it everything, and that's often, and with young cricketers as well, there will be a little bit of mickey taking of the boys who don't go out on Friday night, who are always at training early and always there hitting balls after the sessions, but ultimately they're going to make sure they find out if they've used their talents to the best of their ability or they haven't.
I think what was clear to me when Gareth was mentioning his dad's playing history there, going from first 11 to third 11 and trying to nurture the youngsters through it, I think Gareth's dad there was very clear on what his role was and what he wanted to get out of it. Yeah. And I think having a clear definition of what your role is in the side makes it much easier to gauge your success, whether that be opener, 9, 10, 11, bowling spin. I think knowing your role and having a clear idea of what you want to get out of the game makes it much easier to gauge how well you've done and what you want to do and where you want to go towards in the future.
That's a really good shout. I know a few guys whose role with the bat is minimal and they don't bowl, but they're pretty valuable at mid-off, stood next to a bowler, just having a little chat with them, giving them a bit of advice and
having a look at batsmen and suggesting ideas and plans and things along those lines. So you can have a role that doesn't necessarily have to be based on one of the key skills that we usually look to.
Yeah, you've got a lot. If you've got a lot of experience, which you clearly have, taking a lot of wickets, then that's going to be invaluable to a young, especially a spin bowler, a young spin bowler. If you can be helping out a young spin bowler and you can see them progressing and achieving things that perhaps you maybe wish that you could achieve when you were 20, 21, then, you know, that's satisfying and fun, and it's a new way to look at the game.
Look, he's in the part of the world here where it's 12-month a year cricket because of the climate that they have in Brisbane, which is relatively unique, isn't it? You know, we talk about the monsoon league and all of that in India, but you know, we're talking about a place in Brisbane where you can practice and play all year round, and I think it's difficult for people to continue doing that year on year. I remember back to my younger days where I was overseas pro in South Africa and then would come back and play for Hampshire, and I only actually sustained 3 years of doing that back to back and kept my effectiveness up, because I think the ability to review, to reflect, to recover is absolutely crucial, and it sounds as if you've sort of started to work that one out for yourself by having a bit of a break in the summer, as you talked about in your question, and that's really valuable as well, and sometimes a break is as good as a series of practice sessions. So it's about being effective, isn't it? And you've mentioned that in a couple of times in your question, and I would suggest that over the next few years, because you've still got plenty, 20 years of cricket, if you're anything like my dad, mate, you've got nearly 40 years left in you. But you just need to be sensible about when you have those bits of time off, which will enable you to keep your passion up, which is obvious to us all, and also to maintain your effectiveness.
Let's talk about a couple more practical things. He talks about still justifying his place in the team, even though, you know, he's playing for fun. And we've talked about how he can have a role of experience. But let's talk about, you know, practicing cricket skills as well. How would an older player who perhaps hasn't ever reached full potential, how would an older player go about practicing to keep justifying his place in the team and even perhaps make improvements in some areas where perhaps he hasn't in the past?
Well, to me, being an older player gives you one hell of an advantage over a young kid in the fact that you've played so many games. We're talking about 100 games of cricket here, probably more than that, actually, if it was broken down year on year. And you've got all of that experience. So to me, your practice methodology becomes smarter because you've been through X amount of seasons, you've been through X amount of training sessions, you've watched the game of cricket develop and you've watched yourself develop within that game. And what I see with older players, and this is really prevalent when you look at county cricket and you watch the way that people practice in that, you know, they get to have had a few years in it, maybe 10 or so years in it, and all of a sudden they start to achieve more by doing what seems like less in terms of volume, but actually what they do is just the right stuff. And there's millions of examples. I had a guy called Peter Bowler at Somerset, and he used to practice half as much as a number of players but get twice as much out of himself out in the middle. And that's because when he did practice, he made sure he got his specifics absolutely spot on. He made sure he gave himself reflection time. He was brutally honest with himself, and he used all of that experience that he'd collated over a 20-plus year professional cricket career. So you've got those years behind you. And to me, rather than thinking about what more you can do, I think you need to have a really good sit down and go, right, what have I learned? How am I at my best? When I've gone about it right, what have I done? And then just try and put that into your practice regime over the course of time. You can't buy experience, you know, it's there, you've earned it. So then you need to just learn to apply that into your playing. And again, bottom line is you're going to get more out of your game on a Saturday if you're practicing more specifically.
Yeah, I remember when Mark Ramprakash averaged over 100 in the championship a few years ago, and I read an interview and they said, you know, what kind of practice did you do over the winter? And he said, not very much, really. because he knew what he needed to do to get those runs, and he didn't have to do anything different from what he'd been doing previously, but it all sort of came together at the right time.
With all those, you know, number of years under your belt playing at the level you do and for your club, I was just go back to, you know, your best seasons, think about how much training you did, what you did in the months and the build up into that season, and sort of try and reflect upon the bits that you want to take forward and what you might do differently. I think getting the right volume that both the guys have mentioned is crucial, not overdoing it in the months off. So you get that rest time to reflect. Just think back to your best seasons really, and try and replicate the build up maybe. I know it's not always going to be the same, but try and take little snippets here and there, and prepare how you best feel you prepare. I think preparation is very individual for different players, so find out what you enjoy and what you want to do to prepare, and I think that will help you on the field as well.
That's a great point about thinking back to your successful times and what happened during those successful times, because even if you don't get it exactly right, just thinking back to those times and remembering how that felt and what that was like at the time, that's going to help you in the future.
Oh yeah, definitely. You have to know what you were doing good when you were doing good to know how to get better when you're doing bad, I think. So yeah.
And even if you can't pinpoint why you were doing it well, just going through the process of visualizing your own success can be a really valuable tool for some people, and just in building confidence and preparing themselves to go out and perform a skill. If they can't remember how they practiced it on the day or how they practiced it that pre-season, but they remember taking that catch, or they remember hitting that ball through the covers or turning that ball past the outside edge, just by that visualization of I can do this and I've succeeded before and I'm going to try and succeed again, it just can give you that extra bit of confidence that maybe takes the pressure off, relaxes you a little bit more, and stops you focusing too much on what your arms and legs are doing and lets things just happen for you.
Well, I think that is as comprehensive a reply as was as comprehensive a question. What do we think? It was a challenge, wasn't it?
That's an achievement in itself, and I thought it's a great, you know, it's a great series of questions, really. But to me, the most important bit was the background information that we had, and whilst there's a lot in there, I think there's some real common threads that run through it, and I think James summed it up really when he talked about role. You know, what is the role that you have, and in many ways, your behaviours and your aspirations have to meet, don't they? And if they do that, then you give yourself a chance of being successful, as long as you've made what is successful a realistic thing. And it goes back to our targeting and goal setting that we talk about on the show a lot. We've got to make it relevant and specific to the type of cricket that we're playing and the roles in which we're undertaking. But, you know, I come down to it. What a fantastic story. Hopefully you can now use some of the answers that we've given you to help forge the next part of a story. But your passion is absolutely massive, and without people like yourself, you know, club cricket around the world, it wouldn't be in as great a shape as it is now. So keep up the good work and let us know how you go on with your next phase of your career.
And that is all we've got time for on the show. One question, one comprehensive answer, and that's it. So what that means is we've got an automatic winner for this week's competition, which is the online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. Gareth, are you happy with that?
Yeah, absolutely right. Congratulations. It wasn't a difficult decision this week, was it?
It wasn't. One from one. But if there was somebody listening and they thought to themselves, you know what? If I can get my question read out on its own again, I'm a shoo-in for the prize, the online coaching course. So I'm going to send in my question. How would they do that, Gareth?
Well, they could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. Our Twitter is @pitchvisionacad. You can send us a short question there. Unfortunately, 140 character limit means that we can't get another Andrew length question. But don't worry, because we also have Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. And you can post as long a question as you like on there, and we'll pick it up from there. And you can also see some videos and lots of other exciting things going on. You can subscribe to this show if you want to listen every week. Head over to iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and you'll find us in there. And if you don't want to use iTunes, you want to use something else, no problem. Go to pitchvision.com/academy. Click on the podcast link on the menu in the top, and you'll find the details for how to subscribe to any podcatcher that you like. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Garrus. Cheers, Labours. Thanks, James.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Cheers, lads.